He's Jim McElvain, Marquette legend. I'm going to call him Marquette legend.
He is a legend.
He is a legend. 7-year NBA player with Washington, Seattle, and New Jersey. Then also a longtime radio voice for the Marquette basketball team. And Jim, we brought him on because we want to talk some Marquette basketball. Obviously, we always like to do that when Paul's in the studio. But mainly because of what's been going on. And basically, that you take the end of this last season, the great season they had, the kind of faltering at the end, getting knocked out in the tournament, and now we've got the big transfer of the Hauser brothers. Where does Marquette basketball stand right now in your mind?
You know, surprisingly, I'm not that concerned. I think they're in pretty good shape. They have a great team. They've got some really good players coming in, and I think they're going to be okay. They're not going to be probably as good as they were, but I don't think it's, you know, the end of the world that some people might think it would be. Certainly it's going to be a loss to have those guys leave, but that stuff happens sometimes when you start to put together good programs and there's a lot of competition within the team.
Hey, Jim, it's Paul, and it's great to talk to you again. And I could not agree more with you. And, you know, I've been trying to call all my Marquette friends off the ledge over the last couple of days. You know, obviously something has not clicked here in the past 5 years with Wojo at the helm. You know, we know the track record, you know, come tournament time. And, you know, the Hausers have been a part of that, granted Joey just for a year. But there's a disconnect here somewhere. I'm not sure where it's at. But first, let's take this piece by piece. And what do you think? I mean, I don't know what you hear. I don't know what your theories are. But Marcus decides to come back, and about 3 days later, the Hausers say, we're leaving. So naturally, people assume there's a disconnect between Marcus and the Hausers. Then, you know, there's some conversation about, no, it's about Wojo, it's about his style of offense, and that they can't play for him anymore. And it's curious that, you know, Sam only had one more year left, but I think, you know, his NBA stock is plummeting as he continues to kind of languish at times in this offense. So, I mean, where do you see this disconnect? Is it between them and Marcus? Is it between Wojo and the Hausers? Or is it a combination of things?
Yeah, it has to be a combination. It never is as simple as people want to package it up to be.
Right.
You know, that's appealing, and I understand the desire to want to do that, but I know it's not an easy decision. They're smart kids, and I know their parents. Their parents are good people, and I know it's really difficult for them to do this, but it'll settle down. You know, I have a podcast, the Marked Men podcast, with a fellow Marquette alum, John Scott Lewinsky. We had Coach O'Neill on a couple months ago and talked to him about the recruiting process. It was fascinating to hear it from Coach's perspective. Because he basically said every kid that he went in to the home and recruited, you know, they talked about the NBA. And certainly some of them had that potential, but not all of them. And, you know, if he went in and just said, look, you're not going to make it to the league, just focus on having a great college career and getting a good education, he'd lose that player. Because literally every single high school player at this point is focused on the NBA, believing that's where they're going to end up. And you know, it's not that unrealistic if you have a high major Division I school recruiting you to think that you can make it to the next level. But the harsh reality of it is it's really difficult. And when you look at some of the great players that have come through Marquette in recent years, you know, Marquette's all-time leading scorer, Jarrell McNeil, is also Marquette's all-time leader in steals. Pretty good defender, not the greatest shooter, but certainly a solid scorer if he's the all-time leading scorer. Couldn't play a minute in the NBA. It was that hard for him to get that opportunity. And it's probably, you know, not one single reason why he couldn't get onto a roster, but a combination of things. And that may end up being the case for Joey and Samuel. We had Henry Ellenson a couple of years ago, came in, played 1 year and left for the league and did get drafted in the first round. So he got some guaranteed money, but it's not been an easy path for him either. He finally came on with the Knicks a little bit this year and had a nice little run, but he languished with the Pistons. So it's not the simple, seamless transition that certainly in high school all these players want to believe that it is.
Jim McElvain joins us on Randy & Company, Marquette Hall of Famer, former NBA player. Jim, what happened at the end of the season? I mean, Marquette was sailing. They were 5 minutes away from beating Villanova and winning the Big East. And then just the bottom fell out of this. And I went to New York for the Big East tournament. Looked great against St. John's, you know, won by more than 30. And then they had the tough loss against Seton Hall. And then we know what happened against Murray State. But where did it go wrong? I mean, at the end, can you pinpoint one or two things that happened?
It's probably not one or two things. And I watched it, you know, for the first time in a long time from a distance this year because I stopped doing the radio so Tony Smith could do it and I could move to Florida with my family. But one of the things that people never talk about that is typically one of the biggest factors is injury. Last year, Sam Hauser played out the season with a pretty significant hip injury and ended up having surgery after the season. And this year, Marcus Howard looked really banged up and still able to play. But in a lot of instances, when guys are hurt, they don't want to talk about the injuries and don't want to make it public knowledge because if they still have the ability to play, you don't want to open yourself up to further risk by, you know, telling the opposition, if you step on my foot and I have turf toe like Shaq did for a long time in the league, it's going to make things a lot worse for me because people will do that and not even think twice about it. So I think there were some injury issues with Marcus Howard and potentially with some other guys that really wore them down, and we didn't see their full potential as the season came to a close. That's often a big factor, and a lot of times it's easier to spot because the kid doesn't play anymore because he has a season-ending injury, and it's easy to put that together. But you know, unless people have played at a high level in sports, it's hard for them to understand how beat up your body gets as the season goes on and how much your ability to perform at a high level deteriorates and how hard it is to get warmed up, to get loosened up, and to play and to keep going for 40 minutes night in and night out because it's really taxing on your body to, at a level that, especially at the college, high school to college level, that people aren't accustomed to, and it's a different world.
Hey, Jim, I want to just ask you real quick to follow up on Marcus. I read a tweet about, you know, what is he thinking right now? What's his psyche? Because whether he had anything to do with the Housers leaving or not, we don't know. We may never know. But right now, you know, that's one of the assumptions that a lot of people have. And he's got this burden on his shoulders. How does he deal with this moving forward? And could this impact him at all heading into his final season?
Well, I think it's easier for him to deal with it than people think because he probably has a better understanding and more knowledge of the situation than people on the outside anticipate. I think everything I saw while I was there was that he was very close with Sam, especially, and they got along very well. And I don't think it's like they're not talking or anything like that. And every year I was at Marquette, we had guys that would transfer out and go to other schools, and you kept in touch with them. I'm still friends with Chuck Brakes on Facebook. And, you know, he was a guy as a freshman at Marquette who had a, you know, game where he scored 20-plus points, and he was going to be a solid contributor with us for 4 years. But at the end of the year, he looked at our team and saw some talent, saw some more talent coming in, and he said, you know, I realize this is kind of the end of my basketball playing career, and I want to be the man. And I'll be a contributor here, but there's too many good players at Marquette for me to be the man. And so he transferred somewhere down to Chicago and played out, and he was the man down there. And it wasn't a very good team, but he had fun. He scored a bunch of points and rounded out his career, and it worked out well for him. And, you know, we were sorry to see him go, but we had Ronnie Eford and Shannon Smith coming in. And then, you know, Shannon Smith was a guy who was playing and starting for us, and he didn't feel like it was the right fit for him. He went over to UW-Milwaukee, finished out, had a nice career over there, and we brought more guys in that were really good and didn't miss a beat and went to the Sweet 16. So that's, you know, it's in some ways encouraging when you see some transfers from your program. You know, a lot of people always assume the worst, but you know, sometimes it's not that at all. It's, you know, this kid doesn't see the same opportunity. You know, again, Craig Ahmet would be another one. He was brought in to make sure we had enough point guards, and then Tony Miller broke his wrist and wouldn't stop playing with a broken wrist. So if he's not going to stop playing with a broken wrist, Craig Ahmet's never going to see the floor. So he transferred, played football and basketball at, I think it was North Dakota, and had a great college career. And Tony Miller played 40 minutes a night for us and did really well. So, you know, those kind of things are just part of college basketball and not always, you know, the end of the world, worst case scenario that people really think they are.
Jim, I want to jump to the NBA a little bit here. You're a seven-footer. You had the seven-year career, as I mentioned before, from 94 to 01. Shot blocker, great defensive player, rebounder and all. But where would you fit in today's game? Because the big man now is being asked to step away from the basket. They're seeing a lot more seven-footers that are putting up threes. I saw in your stats you were 1-for-10 career from the three-point line. How would you fit into today's game? And do you like the way the game has changed to be more of an outside game than an inside game?
You know, George Karl was the only coach who ever not only allowed me but wanted me to shoot threes. And we practiced them all the time in practice. And I remember it was Irvin Johnson, who was the guy that was guarding me when I shot the three, and he let me shoot it because, you know, I'd never made one in my career. But you also have to remember the three-point line was closer when I played. They moved it back out. But during the season when and I think it literally was one or two seasons when I was in Seattle that I shot the threes, the three-point line was closer. You know, and when I watched the game change and evolve, from a distance, I thought, you know, there's no way I'd be able to play in today's game, and I just couldn't do it. And again, you know, on that podcast when we had Coach O'Neill with us, who spent a long time in the NBA and knows the transition of talent from college to the NBA way better than I would ever hope to, he said, no, you'd make it for sure. You might even do better because you can block shots, and that's a skill that's so rare and so coveted and so valuable that, you know, whenever you can do that at any point in the game's history, you can find a place and stick around as long as you want. And that was certainly the case when I was playing, and he thought it would still be the case today. Because at the end of the day, you know, if you can defend, that's a pretty important skill to have. And it's not like I was a horrible scorer, but I was never even a double figure scorer in the NBA because it just wasn't necessary. Mm-hmm. You know, I was good, but I was maybe the 12th or 13th best scorer on every team I was on. And they looked to the other guys first, but they were okay with that because they knew I could set screens, block shots, rebound, and do all the other little things that you need to have people do to win basketball games.
Another question regarding the NBA, I want to kind of get your prediction because you are a Wisconsin native, went to high school in Racine, of course, played at Marquette. Are you a Bucks fan, number one? Number two, do you think this is the team that could go all the way, or what's your kind of your predictions for the NBA playoffs?
You know, the Bucks have always been at least my second favorite team when I was playing and my first favorite team when I wasn't playing. And going through my basement, I have pictures, framed pictures, where I'm looking at some of these guys on the roster, Fred Roberts and Larry Krystowiak, and I'm friends with them now. It was a surreal feeling for me to go from a kid that had posters of Marcus Johnson on my wall to having him be the color commentary guy when I was in Seattle. I was, Marcus Johnson, my childhood hero. You know, I've always been a big Bucks fan. I'm excited to see the team doing as well as they are. I hear the rumors about LeBron getting traded to the Bucks, and I'm like, all right, that's cool with me.
That'd be a bit of a 1-2 punch there.
Right.
You know, I know how hard it is for small market teams to be competitive in the league because I know it from a player's perspective. I was one of the few guys in the league that wouldn't have minded playing in Milwaukee because that's where I'm from, and I love this place. But I know a lot of other guys want no part of it because there's really high state income tax. It's really cold, and it's not a big city. You know, if you can go to Milwaukee, why wouldn't you want to go to South Beach, or why wouldn't you want to go to Orlando or Houston, or, you know, somewhere where you don't have to pay state income tax, and it's warm, and there's, you know, it's a nice big city, and so I understand the appeal of the big cities or make more money outside your contract in a major market like New York or Chicago or L.A. Even if the team's not that good, you know, those guys have the confidence to believe, and some of them can, that they can turn the team around. So to see Giannis in Milwaukee and committed to the city is fantastic because he's really the draw. Mm-hmm. And he's the guy that's bringing in other people and making this thing, making it run, and hopefully they can find a way to win a championship, because I'll be honest with you, if they can't, you know, he's going to get to a point in his career where he's going to see, you know, his skills are going to start to deteriorate and his body is going to start to deteriorate and the clock's going to start ticking. He's going to go looking, just like Kevin Durant went looking try to find a championship in another city.
Hey, Jim, one final question. Actually, two. I'll wrap it up into one. But the thought on the Housers, the Virginia with their relationship with the Bennetts, Michigan State, or, God forbid, Wisconsin. They should end up there. Your thoughts on where they possibly will end up, and then the other question is Wojo. I mean, he's had 5 years now. I mean, now he's got turmoil on top of not winning an NCAA tournament. I mean, is it a do or die situation for him? And once Marcus leaves after next season, maybe it's a time for a change there. What are your thoughts on where the Housers go and what happens with Wojo moving forward?
Well, as a Marquette fan, I certainly don't want to see the Housers go to Wisconsin. But as a fan of Joey and Sam Houser, I want to see them go to the place that's going to be best for them. And so if that is Wisconsin, that's fine, you know. And I would hope at the end of the day, Wisconsin fans would feel the same way, where if it's kids from in-state or anywhere, you really want to see kids end up in the best possible place for them. And I'm not worried about either one of them earning their degrees, but finding the best fit for them that works out for their careers. And I had another Marquette teammate, Jeff Savada, who actually transferred out after my freshman year. He ended up at UW Green Bay, played with Tony Bennett. I think when they beat us, Tony was already gone, but the year after they beat us like 37-35. It was ridiculous. But I was happy for Jeff that he found a place. They upset Cal with Jason Kidd in the first round of the tournament. And John Martinez, who was on that team and played at Marquette High, is still a friend of mine. And so even though it's a rival, it's an in-state rival, you know, you always want the best for those guys. And it really worked out well for him, and I'm happy for him, even though it came at an expense of a loss for us when I was at Marquette. So I'd hope the same for Sam and Joe. I just want him to be in a good place. And in terms of Wojo, you know, especially in the climate of college basketball today where, you know, Rick Pitino's coaching in Greece. You know, nobody can touch that guy. And he's one of the greatest college coaches ever. And there's all kinds of stuff swirling around. Michael Avenatti's trying to tweet something new every day about Nike paying somebody or Adidas paying somebody else and Under Armour this and that. You know, Marquette doesn't seem to have any dark clouds around their program at all, which is great news for Marquette fans because there's a lot of very high-level programs that are very nervous right now, and it seems like that talk always elevates around the tournament, maybe because of the higher profile of the tournament. But you know, when the feds get involved, it's a pretty serious deal, and people are plea bargaining and trying to stay out of prison, and I think other dominoes are going to fall. So in that respect, I'm thankful we have a coach like Steve Wojciechowski at Marquette who, by all appearances, from what I've seen and nobody else is saying anything that Marquette's on the hot seat in that regard. It's great to be in that position. I think Wisconsin hopefully is in the same position that they're not in any kind of trouble. Obviously, you'd like to see as much success on the court as possible. But if you would have told me at the beginning of last season, you know, Marquette's going to win more than 20 games, they're going to make the NCAA tournament, I would have said, I'd take that season. That's pretty good. But then, you know, they get into the top 10 and then your expectations change. You want to see them make a deep run. So it's disappointing when they don't. But you know, at the end of the day, you know, are the kids graduating? Is the program moving in the right direction? That's a decision that the AD and the associate AD will have to make and go from there. And it's really nobody else's decision because, honestly, it's their jobs that are on the line with the president if the basketball program is not headed in the right direction.
All right. Well, Jim, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to talk to you again. And hopefully we'll turn this around quickly. Best of luck to you, and thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.